Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Journey to Success Radio Network. My name is Tom Tutall Cunningham, and I'm a Napoleon Hill Foundation certified instructor. I spoke at the Think and Grow Rich Summit in Del Mar, California in April of this year, and at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia in March of 2012. I've had rheumatoid arthritis from my jaw to my toes since the age of 5. That's 45 years now, and in that time I've had 4 hips, 4 knees, and 2 shoulders replaced, and I've been hospitalized about 40 times. I also stand about 5'1" due to the heavy daily doses of the oral steroid prednisone that I took to fight my arthritis, hence my nickname Too Tall. And despite those physical challenges, I always answer amazing when asked how I'm doing. I tell people 80% of the time it's true. The other 20% of the time, it's to remind myself that it's true. You can find out more about me at my website, tom2talltall.com. You'll also be able to get this interview as well. My guest today is Scott Servine, who's one of the producers for the upcoming Napoleon Hill Think and Grow Rich movies. As we all know, Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich is one of the ten most widely read books of all time, with more than 60 million copies sold. It's being adapted into an original series of films. So producer Stephen Simon and award-winning creator-director Scott, who's with us today, and their Think Rich films have secured an exclusive film license to the iconic title from the Napoleon Hill Foundation itself. Don Green, my amazing friend, is quoted to say, "We've always hoped that the right team and concept would come along for a movie version of Think and Grow Rich. Through the years, we've been approached by many people to license the film rights to Think and Grow Rich, but always as documentaries, not as narrative stories. When Stephen and Scott contacted us with their imaginative approach, we knew we had finally met the right team. We are excited that the Think and Grow Rich films, which Stephen and Scott are developing, are going to bring Dr. Hill's legacy work to a whole new generation in a modern, exciting, and entertaining way. The films are going to be each 20 to 25 minutes in length. They're being designed to premiere and play exclusively on the internet for this new generation and on tablets and mobile devices. Production is going to begin in early 2014, and distribution will be later next year as well. Scott and Stephen have launched a Kickstarter campaign for the project, and they plan to make at least 4 sets of films based on the book, with each set containing 3 to 5 films. So welcome to the show today, Scott.
Hey, Tom, great to be here. So glad to be here.
Wow.
Hey, just a quick correction. We're actually on Indiegogo, not Kickstarter.
Indiegogo.
Yeah.
Indiegogo. Indiegogo. And there's no spaces in that, people. Indiegogo. That will be corrected on the website when I make a page about this. And what an amazing idea, Scott. When I talk to people, old people like me, I just turned 50, so many of them say, the young generation, how are we going to get them to read Think and Grow Rich with these examples of all these old fogies, Thomas Edison's and the Henry Ford's and the Woolworths and all these people that to me are big names. To them, they're like, who's that guy? I've seen a Ford car, but I've heard of Edison. Yeah. And the language is a little outdated. And so now young people on their tablets and mobile devices are going to learn these universal success principles. That's pretty exciting to be a representative or associated with Napoleon Hill Foundation, Think and Grow Rich, and getting it to the new audience.
Yeah, you know, we're so thrilled and honored to be a part of this journey. I can't even begin to tell you. And, you know, I've been a filmmaker for 20 years now, and the thing that always just lights me up are stories, personal stories. It's like when I popped open your website and I heard your story about the washroom at the end of the hall. Bang, I'm in. I want to talk to this guy. I want to hear what he's been through, because it's that personal story that really grabs my attention. And so I got to tell you, I've, you know, of course, as we all have, read Think and Grow Rich many times. But when I switched hats and put my filmmaker hat on and said, well, how would I do this now as a contemporary narrative story? Then the things that leapt off the page in me were all the stories. You know, the stories from the book are just so amazing and so inspiring. I think it could speak to any audience, any age, but we are thrilled about sort of aiming towards a younger crowd.
Wow. And when I was at the Napoleon Hill International Convention in Malaysia, they had 3 days of the Napoleon Hill play, the musical. And
wow,
a musical play, orchestra, amazing play, beautiful play. And as you said, you could feel you are now in the story. You identify with the story instead of just reading it. And so, for instance, my wife and maybe other people who don't read it as religiously as I do were able to get caught up in the stories. Wow, very cool. That story, that person. I didn't know that about him. It's not in the book. And so now to do it in that genre of, you know, the most viewed and searched things on the web are videos, and to design it in a way that the young people will learn the principles by visually watching, because we know their ADD attention span these days, and to do it 20 to 25 minutes as opposed to, you know, 3.5 hours. Wow, what brilliant ideas.
Yeah, we're so excited about it. You know, I have a 3-year-old son who I'm just over the moon crazy about, and I actually have another baby on the way. We're due in October, and so the idea that my kids are going to grow up with this information in their life just really lit me up, and it's one of the things that brought me to the table for this project. And I got to say, when I'm reading the book, to be honest with you, the first time I picked up that book and said I have to make this as a movie is when I read Napoleon's son's story, Blair, and what he went through with the father. That astounded me. Here's a gentleman who came up with this amazing insight and tomb of ideas that people could use. But then after he authored those, or during the process of it, you know, creating those ideas himself, his son is born with the affectation of no hearing. And it gave me chills for literally about 3 days. I thought right then and there, if there is anything I can do to bring this material to light to a bigger audience, I'm in 100%. So, yeah, as you say, the power of the story is potent.
And I spent 2 weeks with Dr. J.B. Hill, the grandson of Napoleon Hill, while in Malaysia, and he told me stories about his Uncle Blair. And even more than his grandfather, he said his Uncle Blair was a solid man, a family man, a community man. He made a difference in a lot of people's lives. And you're like, wow, all this from a guy that started with no ears. And you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
His own father and his son applied the principles to make him a solid, outstanding person who leaves a legacy. Whereas in those days, a lot of people would have just been written off as sorry for your luck.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, in movie world, we have the saying that says, you want to make a story that's so good that people literally can't look away. They can't look away from the screen because they're so grabbed by it. And that's the sense I get from these stories in the book. And ironically, a lot of people that are close to me who have read the book, somehow they don't remember the stories, or they're not as, they don't have them right at the tip of their tongue. And I'm like, oh, man, if we could combine all of that, the principles and the ideas along with the stories, I think we're going to have a home run.
Yeah, neat. Now, I know Don Green. I love Don Green. I'm a big fan of Don Green. And he must get approached by every company, every idea. There's probably like Think and Grow Rich bobbleheads. There's probably all kinds of weird things that he gets approached by. And even with this quote I read, he got approached a lot to license the film. And so that leads me to think, what's so special about you guys, or what was different about you guys that he's like, okay, these are the guys?
Yeah. Well, you mean other than our miraculous talent and charm?
Exactly. Brilliant personality, red carpet looks, all those great things.
Yes, yes. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think, I haven't even thought about this, but the answer is in Napoleon's book when he talks about you're reading something, and I know where it is. It's the letter that Blair wrote to the company that later hired him. There was something about the letter that he wrote that was had so much passion and enthusiasm in it, and I think the phrase that stuck out to me was he said, maybe there was even something on the back of the words or something in that nature. And what he was trying to say, what he was saying quite eloquently, actually, was that there was something so powerful about Blair's passion that that's what got him the job. More than any sort of resume, it was the passion for the work. And I think and I hope and I trust that that's what Don saw when he talked to Stephen and I. We have such an unbridled passion for this story, for this work, and to bring it to a new generation. It's almost unstoppable within us. And I think that emanates forth. It's much stronger than anything you could see on the page. It's a feeling level. And so I think that's what did the trick, to answer your question, quite frankly.
Wow. And now, like, one of my goals, big goals, is to have a Napoleon Hill Foundation published book that I'll give to them. Just do what you want and earn what you want. And so what's it like to deal with my amazing friend, Don Green? Does he, had all kinds of great ideas, and is he able to really spice up your own thoughts and help you even improve it even more?
Well, we look forward to that. You know, as in the creative process with Stephen and I, you know, I took the book and then adapted the screenplay from it, and then Stephen and I dove in and did notes back and forth, copious notes. And so it's been a wonderful co-creative process. And the next step, I hope, will be to interact a little more with Don, because I for sure want to get his point of view and his feelings and his opinions as we're going along. That's sort of the way I work as a director. I feel like I'm secure enough in my talent that I'm not one of those guys that locks myself in a room and at the end of 6 months I go, here's the film, I'm not going to change it. I like for it to grow and breathe as we move along. I like to get to a rough cut as soon as humanly possible, knowing that it's nowhere near what it's going to be, but then show that to a lot of trusted people and get feedback, because I'm not about just creating in my own studio. I'm about creating a story that will speak to a very large audience. And to me, that's the fun of it. You know, you do a rough cut. Yeah.
And you use the word stories a lot.
Yeah. And we'll show it to you.
And when you use the word stories, I think of Don Green. Yeah. Like Don Green, he can't answer what day is it today without telling you a story. And he's got amazing ones because he's personally met Napoleon Hill, W. Clement Stone, Charlie Tremendous Jones, all these giants. He's actually been on the stage with them, talked to them. And I admire the guy. He's in his 70s, and he tires me out just watching him on social media because he seems to be in a different place every other day. This is supposed to be a part-time, you know, retirement gig. And, oh, my gosh, the guy puts so much time and effort into it. He's creating a legacy that will outlast him forever. And so I think with the three of you working together, all loving the difference, all loving to tell stories, then it'll come out where people will learn from the stories rather than from, as in the past, just reading the words.
Yeah, and I think that is the key difference. You know, when your heart is caught up in an emotional story, the mind is, ironically, wide open most of the time. If you're hooked by a story, you're going to listen pretty closely. And so if we can seed those principles in along the way, I think we're in good shape.
Exactly. How old were you when you first read Think and Grow Rich?
Well, you know, that's funny you should ask, because when the very first time I read it, I was probably 30 or so, but it didn't really sink in. You know, it's kind of like when you're ready for it, the real depth of this material sinks in. So the first time that I read it where it really had an impact was probably about 42, and that was only because I was just ready for it, you know.
Yeah, when the student is ready, the teacher appears.
Well, and as with any great book, as I'm sure you have found, Tom, that when, you know, you reread it, you see a totally different aspect that you never even glimpsed before. And you're like, well, was I sound asleep on the first reading? And no, you weren't. Yeah. Just so much in there, you pick it up each time you read it. Yeah.
Hey, so enough about the film for a second. I'm looking at your website. Well, first of all, on your website, because I'm a Canadian, I know how to spell Jim Carrey, and you only have one R in Jim Carrey. So you got to fix that. There's a spelling error.
Actually, the original Latin spelling of Carrie is with one R. We lean towards that.
He's spelling it wrong then.
Yeah, I don't know if he knows it yet. We should let him know. But
so before Mr. Filmmaker, which is kind of a cool title. You know how many people would like to have filmmaker as a title? But before that, kind of cool as well, you're a comedian and a magician. I love comedians and magicians. Entertainment for sure. So tell us about that. That's an interesting career. You performed with guys like Jim Carrey, Dennis Miller, and Jay Leno. And those names, like, everybody knows at least two of those names. Most people know three. Most people know Dennis Miller from football and a bad announcer. But
yeah, you know what people ask?
Yeah, tell us about that. That's a very cool career.
Yeah, you know, I can't think of a better preparation to become a film director, literally. And this is not a joke. It sounds like a funny one-liner, but then to being a magician. Because what it does is it creates a certain template in you for how to create entertainment. You know, when you're a magician in the early days, you got 12 minutes. The curtain goes up, you go out in front of the curtain, and if you don't hook that audience in the first 30 seconds, you're pretty much done. And then you got to keep their attention for the whole duration of your short but solid, hopefully, act. And then you got to have a killer close. And ironically, that's pretty much the same template that you have for a movie. You know, the three-act structure is very similar to that in a screenplay. And so having spent years on the stage with both amazing audiences and completely cold audiences and everything in between, it teaches you how to be sensitive to what's going on with them and how to sort of tailor the presentation of your act so that it speaks to them. And so I'm going, wow, it's almost like Karate Kid, where the whole time the guy was sanding the fence and waxing the car, and then he gets to the fight, and boom, he can do it. It was sort of the same thing with magic. I went through years of honing these skills about how to speak to an audience. And then fortunately, I think I was 30 the day I decided I'm going to be a filmmaker. And, you know, everyone laughed loudly, longly. They're like, wow, you're this successful magician. You've traveled the globe. You've won all these awards. You know, at one time I'd won the highest prizes that magic had to offer. Not now, but at that time it was. I was the second youngest magician ever to get into the world famous Magic Castle in Hollywood. I was 15 when I got in and apprenticed till I was 21. I had all these amazing things. And people laughed out loud. But I got to tell you, to me, it's almost the same art. All you're doing in movies is creating a miraculous piece of entertainment that speaks from the heart. And if you do it well enough, people walk away with a sense of inspiration and wonder. And to me, that's what magic was. I had no desire just to trick you or fool you. I wanted to walk into the theater and give you that sense of wonder that you had maybe when you were a kid, maybe when you were five. And you went, wow, and you just lit up. You know, inspiration, the definition of that is filled with wonder. And that's what I was doing with magic, and that's what I'm all about now with movies. And that's why my company is called Movies from the Heart, because I believe by making something from the innermost part of my heart, you've got to be on rails, and it's got to speak to the audience.
Wow.
So I sort of answered a couple of your questions there.
You sure did. And I see you directed Debbie Ford's documentary, The Shadow Effect, and that aired on Oprah Winfrey Network. Oprah Winfrey Network, you know, that's my wife watches that. I'm forced to watch it because she watches it sometimes. And there's some great stuff on there, Masterclass, other amazing things. Wow. So tell me a little bit about that documentary. I haven't seen it. What does The Shadow Effect mean? And then kind of how did it feel when you're watching TV and you're sitting beside your wife and you see, wow, Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah,
my movie. That's my name there. Woo-hoo.
Yeah, it's one of those dreams come true. You know, when you're making a film like that, it's a pretty difficult topic because you're confronting the shadow aspects of yourself that we all have. You know, Oprah talked about it, that she has them. And the difference is, are you squashing them down and suppressing them, or are you finding a positive way to interact with them and dance with them and possibly release them? And so it's quite a topic to tackle. It's not easy by any means. And so, you know, you can imagine, Tom, at various points of the shooting, the post-production, and then the finishing of the film, you get a myriad of reactions from top to bottom. Some people love the film. It's their all-time favorite film. some people can't stand the film, you know what I mean? And everything in between. And what we found was people that didn't particularly resonate to the film, it was because it sort of stirred something up in them. And so I took that as a huge victory. I'm like, wow, we're making cinema that makes people stop and think about their own lives and what's going on with them. Not good or bad, right or wrong, just taking a look. And I think that's something good. And yeah, so when Oprah resonated to the film so strongly, of course, that's one of those moments as a filmmaker where you just go, well, this is why I'm in it. You know, this is why I'm here.
Yep.
And yeah, it was quite an honor and a pleasure and a thrill to have that happen.
Wow. Wow. This is pretty cool. Your short film Out of Proportion won the grand prize at the Beverly Hills Short Film Festival. So anytime you can win a prize that involves the words Beverly Hills and film festival, short, long, comedic, whatever you want to call a film festival, to have won a grand prize at one of those is and was distributed worldwide, that's pretty amazing as well.
Yeah, you know, I got to say, I have such fond memories for that little film because it really started a lot of things in my career, and not just from an outside point of view, but from an inner space as well. I made that film not long at all after my own father passed, which was one of the saddest, most difficult things I've ever been through in my life. I was so close to my father. And I thought, well, how can I channel some of this angst? And fortunately for me, a lot of my angst and pain manifested in some very funny sort of manic behavior, being sort of angry all the time, which is, of course, on the surface underneath, you're just hurt because you've been through this huge loss. But I was, you know, bold enough or brave enough or maybe silly enough, I don't know, to put some of my own experiences on the screen, not really knowing how they would work. And not really knowing how they would be received by the audience. And I think the biggest victory for me with that short film was it was the first time where I really put together really serious, heartfelt moments with really funny, outrageous moments. And the combination of those two is sort of dangerous. It's like, is this going to work? You know? Mm-hmm. And so when I first screened that film, it was at the Beverly Hills Short Film Festival there at the Beverly Hills Playhouse. It was one of the best nights of my life creatively, not because of the accolades, although that was wonderful, but because I was sitting in the back of the theater having taken this huge risk of putting my heart and soul up on the screen, not knowing if it would fly or die, wondering if the audience would just laugh or be bored or whatever. But there was something about the combination of my willingness to be honest about my own pain and what I'd gone through, juxtaposed with me totally laughing at myself about how balled up it made me in regular life, that the audience just loved. And one of the most heart-wrenching moments in the film for me is followed by one of the biggest laughs I've ever gotten in cinema. And so those moments coming together, I'm like, oh man, is this going to work or is this going to fall flat? So the first time an audience went from abject sorrow to fall off their seats laughter within a couple of seconds, that's just one of the best moments I've ever had as a filmmaker. It was so fun to see that work, and to see something that was so honest and heartfelt work.
Wow.
And, so
and to move people's emotions.
Yeah.
Like that. You move
that
them from
kind of really
a despair to laughter. That's a wide range of an emotion in a quick series of period of time to turn it around. It's like, wow.
Yeah, in a very short amount of time. And that really launched something for me as a filmmaker. It opened something in my mind to see what's possible. It made me realize a couple of things. Number one, the audience, no matter where they are in the world, they're smart. You know, when you hear these things, oh, audiences are kind of dumbed down. I don't believe that for a second. I think audiences are smart, and they're willing to listen, and they're willing to watch. And so that brought me to clear from back then to this project here. I've done a lot of that same process with this film. We have as much of Think and Grow Rich in the book as we possibly, in the film as we possibly can, but it's carefully, intricately woven with this main character named Carter Wells, who's 29, he's an app developer, and he is down and out. I mean, he had some success for a while, and now he's got nothing. He's got no money, no prospects, he almost doesn't have a place to live. I mean, he is right on the cliff, and this is when he meets a character who just ironically happens to be an expert in the book, Think and Grow Rich. And so to me, it's so much fun. It's like back to my roots. It's finding a way to bring this over-the-top, funny humor with this main character and juxtapose it with this astounding material that Dr. Hill has offered. So I got to tell you, it's one of the best times of my life creatively. I just can't wait to shoot this thing.
Exactly. Not only this amazing project, Revolutionary Napoleon Hill Foundation endorsed, but now you're using another huge new thing in this generation, crowdfunding. Is that the right word for it? And wow, so this allows people around the world. You could live in Tuktoyaktuk. I actually have to look that up, see if it's a real place. Yep. But you could live anywhere in the world and invest in Think and Grow Rich, the movies. Would this be something that someone would invest in for the pleasure of saying I'm one of the investors, or is it going to be like a good investment as well?
You know, at present, crowdfunding is more donation-based, where you, if you feel moved to donate, that's what you do, and then you get, I think that you're going to see the other pretty soon here. But crowdfunding, I was just having this talk with my producer, Stephen Simon, who is one of the most amazing guys I've ever met, and I can't wait for you to have him on the show. He, for me, is the real deal. He's a real producer. He knows how movies should look, feel, and sound, and he's so creatively involved in the process. It's just a pleasure to work with him. But we were looking at crowdfunding together and going, well, what is this new thing? And I got to tell you, Tom, it is the Wild West. I mean, it is brand spanking new, relatively. And you see everything under the sun from people who embrace crowdfunding and go, this is it. This is creative freedom for the artist. And then you have people that go, no way. I'm not giving money to that for nothing. No. And you have everything in between. So Stephen and I looked at this thing, and we decided one thing. We said, if your heart is in the right place, if you're doing the right project for the right reason, crowdfunding may very well be the most interesting thing that has happened to the arts in a very long time. It gives people the opportunity to be involved with the process. It gives them the opportunity to not sit back and wait for the next blockbuster, which may or may not be great. It gives them the possibility to go, you know what, I'm going to help champion that project, because I'm going to make sure that project sees the screen. I mean, let's be honest, if we walked into a typical Hollywood pitch session with this project, we'd probably be in there for about 30 seconds. Nothing to do with the project, but they would immediately be going, well, you know, how many snowmobile accidents can we have? Can we have an explosion here, you know? So it's really not something we can take the traditional route at all. Now, ironically, that's also the strength of the project. The heart of this thing is so unique and so different, it almost demands a creatively sovereign way to go. And in its best light, that's what crowdfunding can be. It can be gathering a group of people, like-minded individuals, that go, you know what, I'm throwing down for this project because I want to see it happen. And to me, when it's in that light, done with integrity, it is so exciting. It is creative freedom for the artist. It gives Stephen Simon and myself the ability to make this film the way it needs to be made, which is true to the heart of the book, without anybody else going, well, you should do this or you should do that. It's up to us, along with Don Green and everybody else that's working with us, to pilot this film and make it as good as it needs to be. It needs to have the heart and soul that this book has, and that's a tall order, and I think we're up to the task. So, as you can tell, I'm a little bit excited about this whole thing.
You seem somewhat enthusiastic, being one of the 17 success principles.
Yeah.
And what I talk a lot, Scott, about a legacy. Live your life to create a legacy that outlasts you. And you know what? This is something you may never think, wow, how am I going to create a legacy? If you give $100 and it helps create Think and Grow Rich, the movies, and a whole new generation of people become independent, self-reliant, positive, purposeful. Man, you have created a legacy. They may never remember your particular name because of the $100, but you put it into creation. You helped create it. What else better can you do to create a legacy that you might only invest a few $100 to do or to donate to bring this to fruition? I think it'd be better than some of the other things they're giving money to.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it's funny. That's the same light that we've spoken of it as well. But when you just said it back to me, I sort of got chills because I saw it from another angle. And that's so true. Everybody that comes on our Indiegogo site and gives us whatever it is, you know, whether it's $10 or whatever it is, I think of them as part of our family. And I'm not just saying that as sort of something nice to say. It's like I really see that image of we could not do this alone. And the fact that there are other people out there that have resonated to this book, they literally become a part of the foundation of this film. And that, to me, is a great feeling. It makes me feel so powerful. It makes me feel like I'm not in this alone. It makes me feel like there's a universe of people coming together to go, you know what? We're taking a stand. This film is going to be made. And that feels great.
Oh, and it is amazing. And just from all the Napoleon Hill Foundation events I go to, I know around the world people are passionate about Think and Grow Rich and Napoleon Hill, and they're passionately interested in helping to spread the word, get onto other people watching, listening, learning these success principles. And so what an amazing idea. The films, wow, cool idea. Crowdfunding where people can donate to make it a reality, to make the, you know, something they, as you said, you can show your 3-year-old, 5-year-old, 10-year-old, something that they're not going to be like, oh, God, Dad, you better pay me to read this book.
Right, yeah.
You know, now they're going to be like, can I see one of those films again, Dad? I want to learn about this principle or that principle. That one was funny. Let's watch it again. Oh, cool. Every time you watch it, you're embedding the principles into your little kid.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's our hope. And, you know, when people first come across the project, you know, Tom, there's so much out there in the world right now online. It's hard to kind of zero in on something that you resonate with. But what we found, and that's why we're so grateful to you to come on your show, is that when people get a glimpse of the heart of what we're after, when they see that I was creatively launched when I read this story about Blair, Napoleon's son, that called forth something in me that said, I'm going to make this film. And when people sense a little bit of that, they're like, I'm in. What can I do? So it's getting that message out, and that's why we're so appreciative to you and folks like yourself that are helping us get that side of the message out.
Right, because I got like Napoleon Hill certified instructors, you know, on social media that are in Japan, that are in Malaysia, that are in every country in the world. And you're like, wow, can you help me spread this word? And boy, when a Napoleon Hill fan helps spread the word, it gets out there.
Yeah.
And that's an exciting thing. You feel like you're part of a global community almost.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that'll be another exciting part about the production of the film is being involved with that community as we move through the process, you know.
Exactly. So now let's talk about a mastermind. So you and Stephen Simon, are you at some industry event and one of you happened to say the word Think and Grow Rich and the other guy's having a drink and he's like, did you say Think and Grow Rich? Or how did this mastermind team come about or so? How did you guys meet and say...
Cool.
Yeah. Seems like a natural way it might happen. Did he mention Think and Grow Rich? Hold that thought.
Well, you know what's funny is I became aware of Stephen Simon indirectly when I think I was graduating high school because he made this film called Somewhere in Time. And there was something about that film that so grabbed me creatively. And I wasn't even a filmmaker at the time. I was, 18 or 19? I was so taken by that film that I must have watched it 4 or 5 times. And there's a really important part of the plot where someone gives another person a gold watch. And so my girlfriend at the time, for a graduation present, gave me a gold watch that was exactly like the one in the movie. I mean, I was smitten by the film. So that's the first time I became aware of him. And then many, many years later, when I made the film Out of Proportion, the very first people to program that was Stephen and the Spiritual Cinema Circle. And they saw the film and put it up on their distribution network. And so that's when I first met him face to face. And from that moment on, I thought, wow, what else could we do together? And we've done several projects. And it's so refreshing to work with someone who's a real creative producer. I think that, unfortunately, is rarer and rarer nowadays in the industry. So that's where we met. And then I was just finishing my last film. I think it was the end of 2011, and there was a single shot of Napoleon in that film, just a still image. And my effects guy and I had created this camera move where the camera swoops in fast and ends on a close-up of Napoleon's image. And there's something that happened to me in the edit bay. I saw his face, and I literally heard a voice that said, are you ready? And I felt like, whoa, am I making that up? What was that? You know, at that moment, no one else was in the edit bay with me. And so then it inspired me to pick up the book again, and I started reading it. And the second I read it again at that stage of my life, the wheels just started turning. They just started going. And then I read the Blair story, and I read the 3 Feet from Gold story, and I read the Henry Ford story, and I'm instantly seeing these images on the screen. I'm seeing them interwoven with a young, funny protagonist and how they could work off of each other. And I, from the moment I read that book at that time, I just knew this was going to happen. So, nice. You know, the best guy for movies I know is Steven. So I call him up pretty much out of the blue and said, hey, what do you think about doing this project? And he was like, absolutely. Like, not a moment. It sort of reminded me of that moment where Napoleon was standing with Carnegie and, you know, Carnegie pitches him the idea. And almost without hesitation, Napoleon goes, done. Let's do it. That's how it felt with Steve. He, like, on the spot, just got lit up.
Yeah.
So we go.
Neat.
Yeah, so we started
wow.
working probably about a year ago on this.
And so how do you guys work together? Is it do you have disagreements where you're like, are you nuts? That's not funny.
Oh,
this
absolutely.
Is funny.
Yeah.
And so after you have a little battle, you're like, okay, we're going to do it this way.
Definitely. But here's the fun part about it. Steven and I have so much respect for each other. We're just really crazy about each other. I respect and know that I cannot do what he does. And he sort of feels the same with me. It's like we're the perfect mastermind, you know. He has these strengths that he brings to the table. And on all levels, you know, he'll bring creative things to the table that are so important to me. You know, I'll write a whole draft of a whole script. It's 120 pages. And I'll show it to Steven, and he'll go, this is amazing. You know the whole second half has got to go, right? And I go, what are you talking about? And he goes, it's great writing, but I think that might be for the next series of films because it goes off in a different direction. We need to stay with our main character. And that stuff seems sort of obvious. But when you're in it, when you're writing and you're swooped into the creativity, sometimes you lose track of that. And to me, that's what a great producer does. He stands back a little bit and lets me flail around a little bit and then goes,
right.
This is great material, but let's just guide it this way. And so that it couldn't be a better working situation. It's absolutely my favorite working relationship I've ever had.
Nice. Wow. And that's that true mastermind when you can really
say
that.
Isn't
it? You know, even when your ideas get shot down and you say, wow, this is the best mastermind I ever had, you're like, that's a real mastermind. Not shot down, but like, great idea, except
no,
you got to change like three quarters of it.
Yeah.
I like the first three lines. Everything else were changed.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Great. Thank you. So next year, right, you're going to start production early next year, and hopefully a gazillion and a half people will be watching it maybe by Christmas next year?
At least. I think maybe a gazillion and a half, yeah.
We're not going to have a population explosion, but that's all right.
That's right. We can handle that. But yeah, the fun part is I'm so excited about this project. Just between you and me, Tom, I can't tell anybody, but I'm already working on this film. I mean, I'm
uploading
the script. I can't put it down. I'm out location scouting. I've already done a whole bunch of location shoots where I just take still photos and I start to put them up on the screen and go, all right, is this the right background for this? Would it be more interesting if we were by the water over here at the beach? So, like, I can't look away from this project. I'm already in it. But to answer your question properly, yeah, we'll start production the very first part of 2014.
Have you got actors picked out? Can I audition? Can I be somebody? Can I carry
absolutely.
Something or do some?
Oh,
be a background person or something?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, you know, casting.
Hey, that's me in the background.
Casting is going to be so important for this. I think we're going to take an extraordinarily long time to cast it because it's got to be right. It's got to
right.
be dead on. And when we do recreate some of these stories, like the Henry Ford story, those people have got to be solid. They need to embody the spirit of these miraculous individuals. So, yeah, it's going to take a little while to cast, and we're going to get it right. So to answer your question, no, we don't have it cast yet, but we are throwing down to get it right when we do.
Nice. Yeah, have you and Steven started throwing a name here and there? Like, I think this guy could be a candidate.
We have, but we haven't really made it public yet just because there's such early brainstorm. We hate to throw that stuff out. But, yeah, we're thinking about everybody. Yeah, and sometimes we think
whoever,
maybe, you know,
whoever gets that role is now like world famous. It's going to be
a
feature film. It'll be world famous all over. Whereas if you were in a film here, you might be famous here, but maybe not in Japan or China or wherever, Netherlands or all kinds of places people come from that love Think and Grow Rich.
That's right. Hey, and Tom, you're in Toronto, right?
I'm in Toronto.
Yeah, you know, my wife is from Kingston. We get up there every so
Kingston.
Often.
Wow, my dad was an explosives My dad was in the explosives business, and he had a branch in Kingston.
Well, there you go.
So I drive through there a lot from Toronto to Ottawa. So I drive through Kingston, Ontario. Beautiful spot, Queen's University, very historic town in Canada.
Then we can audition you while we're up there. Next time we're up there for a family visit, we'll bring the camera in. Put you on tape.
There you go. I did a little spot or testimonial for a Outwitting the Devil movie that is going to be filmed while I was at the Think and Grow Rich Summit in California. So Napoleon Hill is getting out into film, and so Think and Grow Rich, Outwitting the Devil, is going to be able to bring it to an audience that before would have said, my dad is old. I don't want to read one of his books. I don't want to read one like for my age. So we have a solution for young people that maybe wouldn't have read it, but now they're like, wow, 20 minutes, my attention span can pay attention to that for 20 minutes if you're going to tell me how I can live the life of my dreams and desires and passions and goals. I want to hear about that.
Yeah. Not bad, huh? Yeah, you know, sometimes at my lunch hour, I still to this day will punch up the Napoleon Hill clips that are on YouTube, and I get such inspiration for that. And, you know, the length is perfect for a quick viewing, and then you're back to work, and you feel refreshed.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be something even I and all the certified instructors, Napoleon Hill certified instructors, it would be something we would be nuts if we didn't use it in our own training with our students and with the people that we're, promoting this to. It'll have so many uses. Anybody who's teaching the Napoleon Hill principles certainly is going to be having to use these films to get the points across in a way that moves emotions. And that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Emotions then will create motion, and then will create activity and purpose and goals and all those nice things.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one of the things that Stephen and I are committed to are that these films will have the same quality, production value, everything involved with writing, shooting, directing, acting, and editing that any state-of-the-art film has. So we're just going to do everything we can to bring the quality level of this, just skyrocket it up. So we get that quality we were talking about. You can't look away, you know.
Yeah. You can't look away, and you can't only look once.
Right, yeah. Nicely put.
You got to keep looking.
Yeah.
And then sharing.
Hey, that's going to go on our poster. Tom Cunningham says, you can't look away.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a P.T. Barnum quote about doing something, people love it so much that they come back and they tell their friends about it and they come.
Yeah.
And so this is what it'll be like. People, I think, in Grow Rich and Napoleon Hill, passionate fans will be sharing it around the world. And, boy, you'll make contacts with people from all kinds of countries that'll say, can you do that one in this language and in this language and in that language?
Yeah.
Can you film it here with Japanese actors, with Chinese actors, with Asian, whatever? And you're going to, this will open up a whole new avenue for you,
you know,
for Think and Grow Rich.
Yeah, one of the things that's so exciting is we are planning to do several series of films. So the next series, you know, it's wide open as far as who the main characters are, where it's shot. It could be on any country around the world. So we're already having really fun brainstorm sessions about, all right, what's the second series? Where is the third series going to take place? All that stuff. So we're having a good time.
Nice. What a tremendous opportunity. And so someone's listening. They're like, yeah, I got $50. I got $100. This would be pretty cool. Tell people that, I helped create this film. What is a website, the best one to go to?
Hey, you just go to Indiegogo.com and then just type in Think and Grow Rich, the movies, and it'll pop right up.
Indiegogo,
and you will...
so I-N-D-I-E, and then go, if you don't know how to spell go, then you shouldn't be really investing in this film. But I-N-D-I-E, go.com. And then what do you say once you get on there, just Google Think and, or just search Think and Grow Rich? Or
yeah, but a little search, the easiest way is just type in Think and Grow Rich, the movies, and it'll pop right up.
Nice. Well,
and if someone's inclined and can help us out, you will be part of our family, and we'll do this thing together.
Wow. Well, you're going to get some money from me, and you better get some money from listeners. I'm going to have to start calling them myself.
And, you know, I think it goes without saying, but maybe it doesn't go without saying, if you are inclined to pledge, we really see that as sort of a sacred offering that you're giving us your thumbs up that you believe in us to make this film. So just thank you in advance. Really appreciate that.
Perfect. So remember again, Indie, Gogo, GOGO.com, Think and Grow Rich, the movies, $10, $20, $50, $1,000, who cares? You're helping to bring this to a whole new generation, and just think of what legacy you're creating by donating a little bit of money to bring Think and Grow Rich to a whole new generation. This will help you live on forever through the creation of these videos.
Oh, and by the way, we've got some pretty fun perks for the things that you would pledge. I mean, everything from autographed posters to books to, when you get down the page a little bit, there are Skype sessions with myself and with Steven. So if you're an aspiring filmmaker or aspiring producer, we'll actually potentially, you know, hop on a Skype session with you for 20 minutes and brainstorm stuff. So we really had fun with coming up with those because we wanted to make the whole process as enjoyable and as interesting as possible.
Wow, create a legacy and have fun at the same time without investing a quadrillion dollars. Woohoo! I think that's a winning formula.
Now we're cooking.
Yeah. And for a project that will reach a gazillion people and impact them positively.
Yeah.
Come on, reach in your pocket. If you don't have $25, go make $25 and give it to the film. You're an entrepreneur. You're a Napoleon Hill person. You should be given some money. Amazing, Scott,
you know,
to have you.
I'm
looking forward to this. I'm going to tell everyone who looks at me sideways when these films come out about it, and I'm sure every Napoleon Hill Foundation instructor of every language from every country in the world is going to be doing the same thing.
Oh, that sounds great. Well, I sure appreciate you.
So have fun, and I'm looking forward to interview Steven and see how his story lines up about how did you meet this crazy Scott guy. Was it at a party and one of you is drinking and the other one said Think and Grow Rich and you're like, what the heck did he say? So great. Good luck. Indiegogo.com. Create a legacy for your life. Donate to this project. It's Napoleon Hill Foundation approved. And I know Don Green. He is scrupulous about vetting people and companies and organizations. And so you know it's good people. You know it's a good cause, and you know you can create a legacy with a minimal investment. People may not remember your name, but they will remember these films. You help create those films by donating. So, you know, please do that. I'm sure there's other donations you make that don't have such a long-lasting legacy impact on the world as what $25, $50, $100 could do for this project. Thanks for your time, Scott. Have an amazing day.
Hey, it's a pleasure and honor to be with you. Thank you, Tom.
Take care.